Today's lesson, Ready for Prayer. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to HZ here on I'm Being Shrey with me, Sister Zainab. And so the topic, Ready for Prayer. So Ready for Prayer is not some, in this context today, is not so much the idea that, you know, we do wuzu and we sort of have the right sort of composed attitude and, you know, we get on the prayer mat and we're ready. Not so much that, it's more the paying special attention to one of the prayers. So I'm actually going to be talking particularly about the Fajr prayer, because that's the one that seems to pose problems for people at times, because obviously it comes, you know, at the end of sleep or in between sleep for some people, and depending at times of the year when Fajr prayer is actually quite early. Some people do indeed go back to bed after that. Obviously it becomes a little bit easier other times of the year when we get into winter and we don't have to get up quite as early, so we can just wake up and pray. But yeah, this is an issue that, you know, again and again, and for sure you've heard people comment about it. So I've heard people talk about it. So, I mean, this is, that obviously sometimes people have, they actually get into phases where it's difficult for them to get up for Fajr prayer, or people some days have problems with it. So I just want to mention a sort of little tricks that one of the technique that one of the famous martyrs from the Hall of Defense had. So this is Ibrahim Hadi. So he was, during his life, he paid special attention to praying on time and did not miss prayers. So, for example, with Fajr prayer, and he was often up late at night. Maybe he was going around visiting some local mosque with his friends. So he had a very active and busy lifestyle. But if it was really late, he knew that if he went to bed, there was a likelihood he wouldn't wake up. And he did this with his friends. So if it was quite late in the night and they had a gathering, they would then stay up until Fajr prayer. Welcome back to HZ here on I'm Being Shrey with me, Sister Zainab. And so I'm talking about these sort of little tips and tricks that some people have to not fall into the danger of missing Fajr prayer. And so this is of huge use, especially during, you know, the summer months when Fajr prayer is that bit earlier. And obviously the famous martyr Ibrahim Hadi, and even when he was together with his friends, would simply stay up until it was time for Fajr prayer. And this is something that obviously, well, maybe some of us need to actually replicate. And obviously it could be, maybe it's difficult, but if you, for example, if you're working late, if you've work to do at home, if you've study to do at home, and you know that obviously you might actually, or you're revising for an exam, maybe you're actually sitting up revising for an exam until 1 or 2 in the morning. So obviously I've heard that even though you have to get to the uni or wherever you're going for your exam early in the morning, but you're still up studying. And obviously the danger is if you go to bed when you've stopped studying at 1 or 2 in the morning and Fajr prayer is maybe just another hour and a half away, there is a huge risk that you will sleep through even if you set the alarm. So let's just see if we can also somehow take that on board to somehow do whatever we can so we don't miss Fajr prayer. And obviously people who are living with their families or sort of living with relatives, this is the other onus is, you know, if someone is waking up for Fajr prayer, it's always hugely useful to sort of help other people to get up, because alarms themselves are not necessarily always sufficient, especially if a person has not slept much. So obviously this is something that, inshallah, we'll look towards the lovely tricks of Ibrahim Hadi, and just sort of keep him in mind when we sort of maybe do some of these if we're up late. And otherwise, maybe we need to actually draw our bedtime a bit earlier. And they do say that sleep after 10, between 10 and, you know, and obviously then Fajr prayer is actually the best in terms of our health. So let's just take that as a reminder and maybe do something about our, you know, whether we're getting enough sleep and whether we're actually going to bed early enough. So that's another separate topic. So inshallah, you've gained something useful from today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Beings Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Sky is clear. Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. We are glad you could join us. Here on Iran Radio, we get familiar with interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of Islamic art and architecture, specifically the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surahs and 6,236 verses or ayahs, containing 99,464 words made up of 330,113 letters. The longest surah of the Quran is Al-Baqarah, with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar, with only 3 verses. We start off this hour's programs with the key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. They will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. And our final program this hour is Viewpoints. The program presents an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of the Islamic world today. Stay with us for the next hour.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very important topic, and that topic is related to a subject which is very important in Islam. I'm speaking about judgment, or qadawat, or qada. Of course, it's necessary to remind our readers here that we're talking here about the judgment that a judge, a qazi, passes in court. We're not talking about, like, you know, an assessment that, you know, any and every person can and do, right? Obviously, Islam has said certain things about this very important topic. Islam there are certain conditions. Not every person can become a judge in Islam, and obviously there are certain etiquettes for this. Today in The Key, we want to ask, what are these etiquettes? And we're going to look at some of the hadiths which have been passed down to us from the infallibles regarding this topic. In one beautiful hadith, the Prophet said, "Whoever is stricken with having to judge between Muslims must do so with fairness in his glance, his indications, his sittings, and his gatherings." So one of the etiquettes is that a person should act with equity between opposing plaintiffs. Imam Ali alayhi salam, while addressing a person called Shuraih, said this: "And act with equity between the Muslims, with your face, speech, and sitting, in order that those who are close to you will not hope for bias from you, nor will your enemies despair of your justice." This kind of reinforces what the previous hadith said. In another beautiful hadith, it's been narrated that Imam Ali alayhi salam said this. He said this to Abu al-Aswad ad-Duali. When he asked the Imam about the reason why he was discharged from being a judge, when he had neither been treacherous nor committed a crime, right? Imam said, I saw that your voice was raised above the voice of your plaintiffs. Right, so this is another one of the etiquettes of the judge. The judge shouldn't raise his voice above that of the plaintiff. In another beautiful hadith, the Imam said, again, Imam Ali said, he said this to Shuray, beware of becoming bored and irritated in the court of justice, wherein God has prescribed a reward, and for which there will be good provision for he who judges honestly. Right? So not becoming irritated and bored, this is one of the etiquettes of the judge. Another etiquette is to not pass judgment before listening to both sides. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said this to Imam Ali: when two people bring a case against each other before you to be judged, do not judge the first before you hear out the second. If you adhere to this, judging will become clear for you. Imam Ali alaihi salam said, and after that I continue to be a judge. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said this, supplicating to him, O Allah, make him understand judgment. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the etiquettes of judgment in the light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhim as-salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program, The Key, on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
نقیم الدین و لا تتفرقوا فیه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
یوسف جلالی تهران.
روباشاب گازا.
جروم هیوز برسلز.
سعید پورزا لندن.
راشا سگلم استانبول.
سید امین عالمی کابل.
Shahana Butt,
Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Across the crowded western areas of Khan Yunis, tents stretch as fragile shelters held up by one essential material, wood. Yet even the simplest material is denied to Gaza's displaced families. Wooden pallets, once lying discarded on the roadside, have become a treasure for anyone desperate to keep a tent standing against wind and rain. That's what Rami Ibrahim understood. With his worn-out saw and a rusty hammer, he set up a small makeshift workshop, salvaging every splinter he could collect. From sunrise to sunset, Rami and his children worked together, cracking boards apart, pounding nails, and joining short pieces into long, sturdy supports, repurposing scraps into the pillars that can hold fragile shelter standing.
Most of us now live in tents, as no caravans or suitable housing units have arrived. While many people break down these pallets for firewood, I try to collect them from those who fetch them after aid or commercial deliveries. My children and I carefully transform these scraps into something usable. I even built my own workshop structure from this wood. As the weather grows harsher, at least when people lose their tents, they can find an affordable alternative.
Here in Gaza, wood has become a rare commodity, not for furniture, but for survival. With materials blocked by Israel, the scraps of wood recycled here are the only option for many displaced families to hold their tents from collapsing.
For the displaced families, the fear is no longer limited to Israel's bombs. Even the weather can tear their tents down. On a nearby road, Abu Ihab has just got a few wooden boards from the workshop. He lays them to rebuild a new tent after his previous shelter collapsed under the brutal conditions. With only a handful of boards, he hopes this rebuilt structure will withstand the winds this time, offering his family even a fragile sense of stability.
This isn't the first time I've used these wooden boards. They cracked during the last storm and caused my tent to collapse. Now, I got them again from a nearby workshop. But we really need stronger wood and tarps. What would truly help are proper housing units. Yet, they still haven't arrived, leaving us trapped in this endless cycle.
For Abu Ihab and countless others, the meaning of refuge has long been lost in the ruins of the homes Israel destroyed. No matter how many times they rebuild or reinforce their tents, the struggle remains the same. Families continue searching for materials or any form of proper shelter, but what they truly need remains out of reach as long as Israel blocks the entry of essential construction supplies. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis, Palestine.
Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, marked the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and of the Prevention of this Crime. A seminar was held bringing together former diplomats, members of parliament, think tank researchers, university faculty members, and students. Speakers reflected on historic and ongoing genocides targeting Muslim communities, saying Gaza today represents the world's gravest moral failure.
9th December, and by the United Nations, it's declared as the Genocide Prevention Day, and especially to pay respect to the victims of different genocides. I must appreciate all the people in South Africa and all the other different countries, those have showed their courage to support this issue and to support the people of Palestine, and especially the students of different Western universities. They supported this issue more.
Participants described the situation in Gaza as catastrophic, urging Muslim countries to stand united to defend the rights of the Palestinian people. They said nations like Iran, which have shown firm diplomatic resolve and a strong stance against Israeli oppression, can send a powerful message to the world.
I think it requires the realization and united action by the entire Muslim community around the world. It is not only some people who raise their voices, and it is then forgotten. Well, Iran has taken a stand which is a beacon of light for all of us.
Meanwhile, a Muslim unity conference was also held on the outskirts of Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. Participants from diverse backgrounds rejected U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to end the war in Gaza, calling it a complete fraud.
The so-called peace promise made under Trump's leadership is nothing but a fraud. There is no ceasefire. The massacres continue. The genocide continues. Even the areas Israel was supposed to withdraw from remain under siege, and aid is still not reaching the people.
The participants emphasized that Gaza has become a defining test for the Islamic world, urging Muslim nations to take a united stand against occupation, injustice, and genocide of Israel.
Public anger keeps growing across Pakistan as the Israeli genocide in Gaza continues unabated amid international silence. Many fear that without global action, the catastrophic humanitarian crisis will intensify. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
The annual International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people was observed at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa compound in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa. A ceremony was held on Tuesday, bringing together representatives from the UN, the African Union, and ambassadors from various countries. The event highlighted decades of suffering faced by the Palestinian people, both in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Palestinian people's suffering has intensified under decades of a belligerent Israeli occupation, which has relentlessly targeted our land, the people, and every aspect of life in Palestine, culminating in an atrocious genocide in the Gaza Strip, confirmed by numerous UN and international human rights reports.
Injustice also continues in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, with Israel military operations, settlers, violence, settlement expansions, evictions, demolitions, and threats of annexations. At the same time, hundreds of humanitarian workers have been killed. The majority were Palestinians, UN staff, marking the largest loss of personnel in the organization's history. More journalists have perished than in any other conflict since the Second World War.
Participants expressed support for the Palestinians' legitimate rights, including the right to have independent states.
The Middle East region will not be able to emerge from this excessive crisis unless the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people to establish his own independent state are recognized.
Despite the UN's annual International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people and global calls to address the ongoing crisis, Palestinians continue to face a grave ordeal in the history of humanity. And this event in Addis Ababa urges the international community to move beyond rhetoric and support the legitimate resistance of the Palestinian people in their quest for self-determination.
As we reflect on the hardship endured by millions of Palestinians, we are reminded that solidarity is not merely symbolic. It is a moral imperative. It is a wake-up call to the international community to redouble its commitment.
The event concluded with the 40 exhibition featuring the tragedies occurring in Gaza, honoring ambassadors whose countries have recognized the state of Palestine, and the flag-raising ceremony. Amanil Gabramatin, Addis Ababa.
Officials from the three branches of government, along with leading experts, came together for the National Summit on Enhancing Transparency in Tehran. The event also marked International Anti-Corruption Day.
Transparency and administrative integrity lie at the heart of Islamic governance, which brings the officials of the Islamic Republic together.
Good governance depends on greater transparency and the elimination of conflict of interest situations. This gathering aimed to promote these principles and increase public understanding of the country's governing bodies and their performance.
The outcome of the scientific and expert discussions in this program must indeed be actionable recommendations that contribute to a culture of transparency, which is rooted in our Islamic-Iranian heritage. There is a direct correlation between transparency and conflict of interest, such that greater transparency will allow for easier identification of potential conflict of interest situations. The decisions made by officials across all sectors of governance must be made accessible to the public.
The meeting also focused on discussing policymaking, inspection, technical analysis, and the evaluation of anti-corruption measures, as well as mechanisms to oversee the implementation of the law.
Our country's judicial system, in its capacity as supervisor, will monitor the implementation of transparency initiatives. And at the Ministry of Agriculture, we have taken the lead on this issue by signing the relevant agreement.
Our primary objective is to ensure the seamless delivery of services, supported by administrative integrity and reduced operational costs, while maximizing transparency through the simplification of bureaucratic procedures.
According to Iran's General Inspection Office, the ultimate goal of this meeting is to establish a sustainable system for assessing administrative integrity and issuing administrative integrity report cards so that transparency and accountability become an integral part of the country's managerial culture. Mohin Amini, Tehran.
South Korea will increase its military spending by 7.5%, the most in 7 years. Although a culture of militarism pervades South Korea's society, many believe that money could be better spent.
I think 7.5% is a huge amount. I think it could be used for foreign aid for developing countries or other causes more beneficial than our military or the U.S. military.
Seoul's jump in defense spending comes at the insistence of U.S. President Donald Trump, who's alternated between threatening to withdraw U.S. forces and demanding ever larger sums for their deployment here.
South Koreans' confidence in the U.S. as an economic partner suffered with the expulsion of the country's high-tech workers from factory construction in the U.S. state of Georgia earlier this year. Trump's shift in the U.S. alliance commitment is compounding that unease.
In its national security strategy released this week, Washington neglected to even mention North Korea, South Korea's primary concern, instead highlighting the threat it sees from China. And the U.S. has also been pressuring South Korea to join its Beijing containment strategy, an unpopular policy in Seoul.
The U.S. might try to use South Korea to defend against China, but I think that's a dangerous idea, and I hope we don't get involved.
South Korean civic leader Lee Hong-jong warns of the dangers of getting involved in U.S. conflicts and contributing to the regional arms race.
If we continue to purchase U.S. strategic weapons, often in the name of national defense, and align ourselves with U.S. deterrence against China, it'll be extremely difficult to break free from this dependent defense system. Ultimately, boosting military spending will only exacerbate the threat of war and push the security crisis on the Korean Peninsula to the brink once again.
Instead, many activists here want South Korea to exercise greater independence, reduce military spending, and rekindle genuine dialogue with North Korea. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The human cost of the war in Gaza is etched not only in the lives lost, but in thousands living with irreversible physical trauma. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 6,000 people have undergone amputation since the start of Israel's genocidal war, an explosion of suffering that has reshaped entire families and communities.
Before the war, there were around 1,500 cases, resulting also from Israeli attacks. Now, after the war, the number increased to be over 7,500. This is an indication of their continuous suffering. The prosthetics are not available, and the lack of rehabilitation make the task of this center more challenging.
The ministry reports that children make up one in every four amputees. Their lives are abruptly transformed before they even learn to dream freely. Women account for 12.5%. Many having lost limbs while trying to protect their families or flee bombardments.
Every day, We suffer much because we don't have sufficient supportive equipment or prosthetics. Moving from one place to another is a struggle because roads are battered and damaged in the war, and the transportations are difficult.
I used to borrow the walking stick from my neighbor. At first, I got shrapnel from an Israeli attack that caused my amputation. And 1 year after the amputation, I am still getting rehabilitation with difficulty, as the cases are a lot and the center is overwhelmed.
Behind each number is a story of terror survived. Yet survival, doctors warn, is only the beginning. Gaza's shattered health system offers little for those who must now learn to live differently. Rehabilitation centers lie in ruins, prosthetic slabs lack the most basic materials, and patients often leave operating rooms to a reality without therapy, mobility aids, or even adequate pain relief.
For Gaza's amputees, the struggle now is not only for survival, but for dignity, mobility, and the ability of rebuilding hope in a place where so much has been reduced to rubble. At Ibrahim for Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint, a critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting it. And my guest speakers, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. And the pleasure is all mine. Sayyid Abdullah, how are you? And assalamu alaikum, greetings to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. One of the movies that we decided actually to start criticizing is, a fairly old one, What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward, featuring actors and actresses such as Robin Williams, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Jessica Brooks Grant, to just name a few. IMDb gave this movie 7 point out of 10, while Rotten Tomatoes gave this movie 52%, and Prime Video 7 out of 10. The film tells the story of Chris Nielsen, a man who dies in a car accident and enters a vibrant afterlife, only to discover his wife, Annie, has committed suicide out of grief. He embarks on a quest to find and reunite with her in the afterlife. That's about the plot of this movie. And before we get on with our program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, we'd like to have a little break by listening to a short part of this movie, or a trailer of the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward. Stay with us.
The moment that comes for everyone. Has come for Chris Nielsen.
You've died, Chris.
If heaven were a place of beauty...
Oh!
Boy, I screwed up. I'm in dog heaven.
...and wonder...
Nice place you got here.
No. Nice place you got here.
We all paint our own surroundings. You're the first guy I know to use real paint.
Where you felt no fear...
I'm gonna drown.
Can't. You're already dead.
Oh.
...and knew only joy...
I can fly.
Yeah! It's your world!
Could you forget the past?
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward. We didn't finish the criticism of this movie, so we left it up to this episode, or in the upcoming episode, inshallah, we'll finish the critique of this movie too. Well, Syed Abdullah, let me ask you this question. What is the overall message about love and its power in the movie?
That love will save you. That love always wins at the end. If you have love, you can do whatever. You can do the impossible. You can go to hell and back. Isn't that what we say?
Yeah.
I'll go to hell and back for you. So literally, the guy went to hell and came back for love. So love has that power that can bring things together. It brings mountains. Yeah, bring people from different realms and different universes. That's the idea that they're trying to push forward, that love could do a lot of things if it's genuine, true love, mm-hmm. And the person really believes in what he loves for. So the idea is that if you love someone, love them from the depth of your heart, and then see magic happens. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that true love happens on in this physical realm too?
It does, but very rare. Like Brother Yasser, he mentioned the definition of love is that having that genuine. I think that sometimes, see, when we love each other, he said the love is only for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is something I believe in and I live by. Only for Allah. What we have for each other is not love. Allah says, rahmah, compassion.
What about the mother's love actually for each other?
Yeah, that's Allah says, ja'ala baynakum mawaddatan wa rahmah. There's this compassion and there's mercy. So we act based on these two. But sometimes what happens is that if you find someone, if you yourself hooked with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you love with Allah is very strong, and then you find someone that has the same love for Allah as well, you and them connect. Especially between a male and female, I'm talking about, sometimes it even happens between males themselves, and that love kind of like it becomes really intense. So a person could say, like, this person, I love them, and if you ask them to explain that kind of love, it's not lustful, it's not platonic. It's just something that I cannot put words to it, describe. So it does happen. And I think the example that he gave is the Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi and Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayhi.
Yeah.
Is that they had a love for one specific thing, and their love is in the same intensity that they connected with each other. That Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, when Fatima alayhi salam passed away, he felt the pain. He himself, he was in grief for a long time. They were soulmates. Imam Hussein salamullah and Lady Zainab alayhi salam, they were soulmates because they were focused in the same. That
when we are talking about these 14 infallible figures, basically, you know, we are talking about genuine article.
Yeah.
Right? If you talk about their emotions is true to the core.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying it happens to people. I'm just giving example because I don't know anyone in my circle. But I'm just giving example that it could happen to real people. If it happens to the ma'asum is an example for us, right? So if it can happen to them, it could happen to me and you.
Because they're human beings and they're a role model for us.
Exactly.
Right?
So at some point, you might find it. Someone might find it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. God knows. I got close to finding it.
Yes.
But it didn't work out.
I see.
So, but it happens.
Okay. Brother Yasser, in what ways does this movie address the concept of reincarnation? Does it at all?
At the end.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
That's one of the things. Like I said, some of these movies, they show certain truths, but then they destroy the entire truth or something that is completely ridiculous. Because at the end of the movie, there's a conversation between the husband and wife who says, do you want to do this again? Like, what, they can go back to the physical world, and then they showed the last scene of them being on the pier. And I'm assuming, because in the beginning of the movie they were at the river in the Swiss Alps, if I'm not mistaken, and then she gave him a sandwich. And again, at the end of the movie, they showed these two kids, again, one symbolizing him, the other one, the girl symbolizing her, and she giving him a sandwich. At the end of the movie, and then she giving him a sandwich.
Right.
So that thing, or can you come back into this world after? That is something that I don't think any religion, besides obviously in terms of Abrahamic faiths anyway, don't believe in. But you cannot come back into. However, there is concepts of raja and stuff, of the return that we have in Islamic culture and so on and so forth. But that is not out of the request of the person. That is out of the permission of God.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference. This is we want to go back. Okay, who gave you that permission to go back?
Yeah.
How do you all of a sudden decide that we'll go back? And then these children will be waiting. That was the thing. We'll go back. We'll live our lives again.
Right.
And the children will be waiting for us here. Okay, but how do you know that you're not going to get new children? What's going to happen?
Why would you even bother in the first
place?
Exactly.
Why would you?
You've seen the pain. You're already with each other in heaven.
Yeah.
Why would you go back?
You've seen the pain.
Why you're enjoying?
Yeah, that was really like.
Yeah. That scene kind of messed the movie.
That was what I thought. They could have. I mean, the director could have done away with this.
There was no need because because you mentioned God in one place, and then on the second thing you. He mentions God, like you said, once or twice.
Yeah.
Like God is up there kind of governing. Okay, all of a sudden he's not governing this. He's given you the permission to decide whether you go back or not.
Right.
On what basis? On what conditions do you go back?
Yeah.
And you meet again, and we're so soulmates that we'll meet again somewhere, and we'll live our life again.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the Movie Creative Program, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
I need Annie. That'll change in time. Time does not exist here, and wherever it went, it's not going to make me need Annie any less.
Or would you journey beyond heaven and hell?
You never see her.
I'm her soulmate. I can find her.
To get it back.
All you're good for is your wife loves you.
You just kept me there.
Robin Williams.
It's about not giving up.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
He's never been anywhere like this before.
No, neither have you.
I'm not leaving him.
Annabella Sciorra.
Across whatever distance there is, I send you my love.
You'll find. You can do it. I believe in you. I'm still here, babe. I still exist.
What dreams may come.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammed Javed, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Said Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward. Said Abdullah, how does this movie challenge the traditional views of heaven and hell? We have seen a lot of movies actually with pictures and portraying of heaven and hell.
Yeah.
How does this movie actually treat them?
This one is really like they're not doing anything by tradition. They're just going off tradition. They're just going by whatever they think is
imagination or something.
Yeah, they're using their imagination. So heaven could be like this, could be like that. See, from a Christian perspective, heaven, you just walking through this gate and everything is beautiful and everyone is together. This one's saying, no. Everyone has his own universe and his own things, and everyone is different, and which is quite similar to an Islamic perspective in this regard. So you can change things, like heaven just keeps changing from one state to another. Whether you go to hell from a Christian perspective is just a fire where people burning and screaming in fire, right? And this one, no, you have levels, and there's even a shipwreck, which does not make sense to me. Why would you have a shipwreck in hell? Really, it's like, I don't know. So, and you can see this level, people drowning. Why would you drown? Like, what's the idea of water? And then people stuck in mud. Then people, it's like they try their best to go outside the traditional narrative, which is just fire.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, no. You can get burned just by, or you can suffer just by using in your old house. So they went out of their way in terms of...
It's something which is taught actually in the new waves of mysticism.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't it like this? Like they think that, for example, with the envy you have...
It's not just mysticism. Even in the akhlaq science, we do say that you're whatever you feel is going to be a source of punishment for you, and you will be resurrected in that form that you feel like.
Exactly.
You know, if you have jealousy, you'll be resurrected as a snake or as a, I don't know, and people walk all over you. But that has nothing to do with hell itself.
I see.
So how we're going to be is one thing, but how you're going to get punished is another.
Okay. Quite related to this question, Brother Yasser, it's a kind of continuation of this question, actually. What does Islam say about heaven and hell?
So this is one of the very difficult questions. Yes, we have, for example, in the Quran and the Ahadith, they clearly depict certain things that are going to happen from the time your person passes away till the day of judgment to heaven and hell. For example, the questioning in the grave by the angels, then the scales, then the sirat, taking of one's books, and so on and so forth, right? But if you, that's on a very basic kalami perspective. However, if you look at it on a level of philosophy and maybe even to a certain level of irfan, it changes. That these things do not become symbols anymore, they become real. That heaven and hell are nothing but you, the person, individual.
Yes. Mm.
What do we mean by that? One of the things that is there is called tajassumul a'mal. Your own actions take form.
Crystallizing.
Whatever they call it. Your actions become form.
Yes, and they take forms in you.
They actually then, you know, manifest themselves in you as a person. So the thing is that you do not lose yourself. You are you. You always will be you.
Yes.
You know, that existence that you have is that existence that continues. And right now it is that, you know, some of the famous things that the verse of the Quran al-Majid that says about eating the money of the orphans. And the ulama says is that if you eat the money of the orphans, it's not going to be something that you will, you know, something that you acknowledge or feel later on, but it's happening right now at this very moment in time. So, for example, when they speak about heaven and hell, it is not something that is going to be in the future. Even the Quran al-Majid, if you look at the verses, it's not speaking about something in the future, it's speaking about something in the present. Right now, while I'm sitting in front of you, my heaven, or rather my hell, in front of you is taking shape because of my own actions, my own thought, everything that I do, my actions, my thoughts, my intentions, my interactions with you, with other things, with this chair, everything is being fed into it's very difficult to put, fed into my soul to a certain level that heaven and hell that I will later become manifested to me after I pass away is already taking shape.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We were struggling to criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Winston Worth. Of course, we haven't come to the end of the criticism or critique of this movie, and we'll do that in the next episode. Thank you very much, and follow us for the next episode to criticize this movie and finish it. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners from around the world. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We'll start off this hour's programs with Unscripted. The program provides analysis and commentary on some important and sensitive issues of the day, with emphasis on the West Asia region. That will be followed by The Last Savior. The program discusses the occultation of Imam of the Age, the promised Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, the culture of waiting, and much more. Stay with us for the next hour.